Okay, let's begin. I want to thank the shul, the Rebbetzin, and of course the Katz family for once again inviting me and honoring me with the invitation and with your presence. And I thank all of you for coming out. I don't know if the week before Tisha B'Av is as busy as a week before Yom Tov, but somehow it seems like in the summer people are always busier, kids are not in school. I think at this point, no matter where your kids go to school, they're not in school anymore, I think. So it's a challenge, and therefore I thank all of you for making the time this evening for what I hope will be not only a stimulating and insightful shiur, but I hope, as I always make as a goal, that it should be inspirational as well. I prepared a source sheet. It could be that Baruch Hashem there aren't enough pages, which is always a good sign. You should know that for those who have the sheet at all, yes, it's a one-sided source sheet. We'll only be making a brief reference to it. The sources shouldn't intimidate you. Some people are very comfortable with sources. Other people are a little bit less comfortable. But for those who are comfortable, I like to provide sources for you. You shouldn't think that I'm tricking you in any way. You can evaluate and read the sources on your own. And for those who are uncomfortable with it, I promise you that it won't be too heavily focused on the sources, but it's there as a reference for you. The topic and the title of tonight's shiur is what is Sinas Chinam and what can we do about it? And I feel that that's not so much a cliche as much as a very important combination, and the order of the question and the title is very apt, because if we don't even know what Sinas Chinam is, then we certainly can't do anything about it. And it will be the contention of the shiur that to a large extent, at least according to the understanding of some of Farshim, even as much as our heart may be in the right place and we want to avoid, eradicate Sinas Chinam, could very well be that we've never understood what it is. And if we don't understand what it is, then we certainly don't have any chance to do anything about it. So let's begin with the very famous and well-known statement of Chazal in the Gemara in Masechta Yuma. It's the top source on your page, Daf Tes Amud Beis. This is the source where the Gemara, the Chachamim, try to understand with their Chachma, with their Ruach HaKodesh, why was it that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Hashem gives us this tremendous matana, Nisim v'Neflos. The Mishnah talks about the daily Nisim. Amazing, amazing thing. And then unfortunately, two different periods in our history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away the matana. And let's not use such a sanitized phrase of takes away the matana. It wasn't just that some bricks and mortar were destroyed. There was tremendous upheaval. I don't know if I would put it from the human perspective on the level of, let's say, the Holocaust, Rahman al-Islam, but there was death, there was starvation, there was torture. The Midrashim, in very painful and vivid detail, describe what happened. In fact, in another comment, Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash at that point out of Rachmanus. Hashem poured out his wrath on Eitzim V'Avonim, and it was only then the Jewish people could sigh relief that they weren't going to be completely annihilated. So as much as we mourn the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, it is so much more than that.
Can you just say the word that you are saying, just translate them into English?
Yes. Sticks and stones. It's a euphemism for the temple, for the Beis HaMikdash itself. So the question is why? Why did it happen? Inquiring minds want to know, and Chazal were certainly inquiring. So the Gemara gives the famous answers. On the first line of the first source, the Gemara tells us that the first Beis HaMikdash, the first temple, was destroyed. Why? There were three common, very ubiquitously violated averos, the big three as we know them, Avodah Zarah, idolatry, Gili Araya, sexual morality, Vishvichos Damim, and murder. So, on the one hand, it's shocking to imagine that these were rampant violations in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, if it was the case, so it's not surprising that HaKadosh Baruch Hu got fed up with us. Okay. Then the Gemara continues on the second line and says, Aval Mikdash Sheni. What about the second temple, the second Beis HaMikdash? Why was that destroyed? It's not just Stam Akasha, it's not just a plain question, but the Gemara actually accents and articulates the difficulty. Shahayu oskin b'toru b'mitzos u'milas chasadim. We looked around in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Did we see murder? No. Did we see avodah zarah, immorality? No. We saw kailulim, Tehillim groups. We saw chesed. We saw long minyanim. We saw people doing so many good things. So how come? How come? Now that's really a mystery. So the Gemara answers at the end of the second line, Meshahai Sabo Sinas Chinam. Because there was, apparently, unwarranted hatred the Jews had for each other. So we, unfortunately, take Sinas Chinam for granted. Right. We're so used to it. We're marinating in Sinas Chinam. But the Gemara was shocked. This is shocking. It's a shocking statement. Not that Jews should hate each other. This is already from time immemorial. But that this is going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara gives voice to its own shock immediately. On the third line, the Gemara says, L'lamedcha, and this comes to teach you, Sheshkula Sinas Chinam Keneged Shalosh Averos. The potency, the destructive power of Sinas Chinam is equally great, is just as grave as the destructive power of these three cardinal Averos. That's the first stage of the Gemara. And of course, that's the predicate, that's the whole basis of the whole Shir tonight, is trying to understand this statement. Because after all, we are all living in the shadow of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. We are living in the shadow, and all kidding aside, with the continuing and ongoing problem of Sinas Chinam. Numerous Mefarshim point out, in certain circles they quote this in the name of Rav Kook, in other circles from Yecheskel of Kuzmir, and others, that if the Gemara says that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, then the only way the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt is because of a tikkun of that, of Avas Chinam. And we put two and two together, if the Beis HaMikdash is still not rebuilt, well, you don't need to be a genius to figure out why we don't have a Beis HaMikdash yet. The problem, unfortunately, is obvious. So Ad Kan is the necessity, the predicate, the whole basis of tonight's share. That was step one. But there are two more points in the Gemara that I just want to bring your attention to before we dive in and answer the question of the Shir, what is Sinas Chinam? We think we know, but we may not. But before we get to that, just take a look for a moment at the next line of the Gemara, the fourth line of the Gemara. The Gemara makes the following related but additional distinction between the first two Batei Mikdash, between the first two temples. Rishonim, I'm on the fourth line, Shenitzgala Avonam, Nitzgala Kitzam. When it came to the first Beis HaMikdash, it was clear what the Avera was. Why? Because they had Nevi'im in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, and they were shrying, they were telling the people what all the Averas were. Unfortunately, nobody listened. But it was also the case with Nevuah, with prophecy, that they knew when the end would be. And in fact, how long was the Golus of the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Merely 70 years. But everyone knew the problem, and everyone knew ultimately what the solution would be. However, says the Gemara, that was not the case with the second Beis HaMikdash. Achronim, in the second generation, meaning in the generation of the second Beis HaMikdash, Shelo Nitgala Avonam. It wasn't apparent what the Aver was. We know because Chazal with Ruach HaKodesh told us it was Sinas Chinam. But Rashi points out that the Sinas Chinam wasn't obvious. Again, all joking aside, it doesn't take long to see Sinas Chinam in our world, because we don't hide it at all. However, Rashi in Marsha, other Mefarshim say, they hid their Sinas Chinam. So they had a talus over their head, and they shuckled a lot, which the Gemara said. They davened, they had learning, all these things. And they kept the sinna even in their heart. They pretended they were your friend, when really they hated you. So no one knew. Not only did no one know because we saw the learning and all the Torah and the frumkeit, oh, it's so frum. But not only that, we didn't even necessarily know about the sinna. And, the Gemara continues, furthermore, something that we're bitterly and painfully aware of, lo niskala kitzam. It was, and it's still never been revealed, when the end would be. We don't know when that end will be. So that's a second step of the Gemara, and I want to try to understand, I hope if we can at the end of this year, what exactly that means. And finally, the third part of the Gemara, very important. The Gemara weighs the following question. It's like a human tendency. Sometimes I don't like that tendency, but you see here that the Chachamim had a similar tendency, that we always want to know, like from one generation to the next, who was better. I had this, I don't know if I ever told you this story, but a few years ago when we were still living in Baltimore, so my oldest son, who is now 12 and a half, but he must have been about 6 or 7 at the time, he was at the same time getting very into sports in fall, and baseball in particular is very prone to comparing this player versus that player, this player in this generation versus that player, and my son was already Mahadran in this. At the same time, within a period of 2 short weeks or so, a very short period of time, once at school and then once through me and in the shul, he met 2 prominent Gedolim Rashi Yeshivas. So we were in shul sometime afterwards, and he says to me, Abba, and he names the two. I will not. He names the two big Rabbanim, and he says to me, Abba, who's bigger? Him or him? And it dawned on me that in his mind, it was the same thing like asking me, you know, who was better, Hank Aaron or Babe Ruth? His mind was already trained to be thinking, you know, who, he's comparing who's better. So he's already saying this Rav or that Rav. So it's a human tendency. Most of us are still just big kids. So we do it also. So the Gemara, Lahavdil, does it, but in the opposite, Nebuch. Not who was better, not only who was better, but also who was worse. Which generation was better or worse, as the case may be? The generation of the first Beis HaMikdash or the generation of the second Beis HaMikdash? So the first opinion in the Gemara is that the people in the first Beis HaMikdash were much greater. After all, Yavidas Hadoros, don't we always assume that the people who come first are better? But then the second opinion says, no, how could you say that? And then the Gemara concludes with a proof. What's the proof that the people in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash were greater? Says the Gemara at the end of the last line of the source, Amarle, in the middle of the line, Bira Tochiach. The building, if you will, the castle, will prove. What's the Bira? The Beis HaMikdash. Shechazra l'rishonim v'lo chazra l'achronim. As the Navi tells us, and if you've ever learned Ezra and Nehemiah, you know that there were people who were alive for the first Beis HaMikdash, who are also alive at the dedication of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the fact that the second Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt so quickly indicates that as bad as the first that generation was, they had some milos because they were merited already another Beis HaMikdash. But the generation that caused the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash was obviously much worse, because Nebuch, we still have no third Beis HaMikdash. That's the 3 stages of the Gemara. Number one, the basic shocking idea that the Gemara equates Sinas Chinam with the cardinal 3 of Eros and identifies that as the cause of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, despite the fact that in the Gemara's words, they were Osek in Torah and Mitzvos and Gemilas Chasadim, number one. Number two, we had the idea that in the second Beis HaMikdash, Lo Nisgala Avonam Velo Nisgala Kitzam, they didn't know what the Avera was, and they also didn't know when it would come to an end. And finally, the fact that it seems like maybe it's not only as bad, but maybe even worse. Haraya, after all, we don't have a third Beis HaMikdash. So, with all of that as a background, now let's ask the basic question, the title of the shir. If Sinas Chinam is as bad, and in some cases even worse, what is Sinas Chinam? What does that mean? So I want to briefly touch on 2 possible explanations, but then I want to focus the main part of our shir on a third explanation. The first approach that I want to mention to you is the simple approach. And sometimes simple is also correct. But the simple approach, Sinas Chinam, is hatred. People hated each other. What do you mean they hated each other? We know what it means to hate somebody. Kids hate each other in the playground, adults hate each other in the boardroom or in the shul. People hate each other. So 2 sources that just flesh that out. You can see this very briefly in the next 2 sources. The Talmud Yerushalmi, which is the parallel text from the Talmud in the Yerushalmi, which is of course written a little bit earlier. There the Talmud says, just in read the underlined part, tells us something which is a little bit surprising, that in the second Beis HaMikdash, one of the problems was Ohavin es HaMamon, that you don't get in too many sources. The Yerushalmi says one of the downfalls was they were too focused on money. But then the Yerushalmi adds something more familiar to us, V'sonin elu le'elu sinas chinam. Right? So in case you didn't know what sinas chinam was, the Gemara makes it, spells it out even more here. Sonin elu le'elu, they hated each other. Maybe it had to do with money. How many machlokesim have been caused over money? Whenever you know a family that's in machlokes, 9 times out of 10 it's about money. I've had numerous experiences in my rabbinate and beyond. We have family members who wouldn't even sit shiva together because of long-standing hatreds. And without any doubt, 99% of the time it was always about money, at least at first. By the time that now they don't even remember what it's about. But if you were going to dig, so maybe here the Ovim is a Mammon and the Sonim, who knows, this is just a little Hasidic drush, but maybe it's really even connected. The Medrash in the next source in Eicha Rabbah adds just a little accent to this. The Medrash there actually speaks about a very vivid image. It's Kedai just to review the image because it's evocative. The Medrash here tells us that on the night of Tisha B'Av, when the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed, Nichnas Avar Mavinu Bebeis Kodesh HaKadoshim V'hischil Mitailbo Aruchos Uktaros. Avram Avinu comes into the Beis HaMikdash as it's burning and being destroyed, and he's kind of walking to and fro, pissing up and down the hallways of the Beis HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees him and he says, Ma ledidi bebeisi, what are you doing here? So Avram Avinu responds, Heichad hein banai, right? I'm the father of the Jewish people, where are they? HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, Chatu lefanai v'higlisi osam, they sinned and I had to send them into Golus. So Avram Avinu says, and again, this is, if you appreciate Tanakh, you see how beautiful this is. Avram Avinu says, "V'lo hayu behem tzadikim." What does that remind us of? Sodom, the beauty of Medrash. What about Sodom? Even that. So the Medrash gives this sin and that sin, and then the Gemara adds, "V'lo od." Excuse me, the Medrash. One version of the Medrash says, doesn't use the word sina, but in essence tells you what it means. When people are happy for spite. It's like a question of whether I do well, but I get even more simcha when you do poorly. The other version just says more simply, how you sonim zezed. There's a famous story in Brisk, with Reb Chaim Brisk, and he had a dayan, Reb Simcha Zelig of Brisk. So the story goes that there was a person who came before Simcha Zelig and he had a fight. First he came with the chicken. He shechted the chicken. He wanted to know if it was kosher or not. And sure enough, the dayan said it was treif. So he lost whatever money he lost. Sometime later, the same shaychet came in, a machlokes, a sichsach, with another person, a member of the community. So the dayan heard the case. Defendant, litigants, blah, 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 blah. In the end, the dayan paskined against the butcher. And this time, the butcher went nuts, screaming, berages, and cursing, and everything against the dayan. So after it was all over, he said to Reb Chaim, he said to the Rav of Brisk, I don't understand. Not that long ago, I paskined also against him. And there he lost as much money or more. But there he didn't scream at me. So Reb Chaim said, you don't understand. He's not upset that he lost the money. He's upset that the other guy won. That can drive, if you hate somebody, the thing that drives you the most mad is when they do well. You can handle your own losses, but not that they should do well. Chas v'shalom. That my kids have trouble I can live with, but that she should have nachas? This machsheva. You don't know people like this? I'm the only person who knows people like this? Nebuch, I didn't say I know many. But there are people, Nebuch. They're swimming, they're drowning, I should say, in their own hatreds. So this is exactly what the Medrash says. This is the Medrash says, Smeichin b'mapalason elu ad elu. Things haven't changed. People are happy with the downfall of others. It's interesting, this is an aside, and then I want to move on. This may relate to a very, very brilliant insight of the Maharal about perhaps the most famous other Gemara associated with Sinas Chinam, and that is the Gemara of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. So I just gave you in the next source just the opening line of that Gemara. The Gemara there said before telling the story, you know, what's the headline, the billboard, the headline of the story, says the Gemara, Akamsa Ubar Kamsa Charav Yerushalayim. Because of the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, Jerusalem was destroyed. Then the Gemara gives the whole story. What was the story, right? It says there was a person who's never named in the Gemara, had a friend named Kamsa, had an enemy named Bar Kamsa, made a party, he sent the Shamus to give the invitation, and the Shamus made a mistake, because he was from Chelm, and he brought the invitation to Bar Kamsa. And you all know the rest of the story. So, asked the Maharal and other Mefarshim, Nebuch, what does poor Kamsa have to be dragged down for all of Jewish history with this horrible story? What did Kamsa never makes it into the story? He's the guy who didn't get invited. He's never part of the story. Bar Kamsa got invited by accident. Then the host, who's never named, again I repeat, the host is never named, is so selfish and so mean, and he throws him out, and he begs him, I'll even pay for your whole party, your happier party, and he still embarrasses him. And that's terrible. And some of Parshim said the Chachamim were at the party and didn't do anything. And then Bar Kamsa goes crazy and off the deep end, and he goes to the head of the Roman authorities, and he malshes the Jewish people, and everything leads to the Romans crushing the Jewish people. Second Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. So I know why Bar Kamsa is a bad guy. And I know why the Baal HaBayis is a bad guy. Ask the Maharal and many other Mefarshim, what did Kamsa do? Why would the Gemara say, it's a phrase we all know, Akamsa Ubar Kamsa Charav Yerushalayim. Maybe not, what did Akamsa do? Kamsa didn't do anything, he just didn't get invited to a party. Bad enough, he didn't get any, you know, hot dogs and, you know, pigs in a blanket and, you know, he didn't get any potato conditioners or anything. Chalup, just nothing. And then he has to be known for all eternity that he's Kamsa Ubar Kamsa Charav Yerushalayim. So says the Maharal, I'll tell you why he gets indicted. Shmo Kein Hu. It's not a coincidence that their names were Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. What does it mean to be a Kamsan? So the way, it could be stingy in other contexts, correct. But the way the Maharal understands it here, is he says, it's as if when you're taking like a kometz, if you take like a fistful, like when we talked about the Kohen, when you're taking some and you leave others. Says the Maharal, the next lines of the Gemara, which I didn't put here, is that the guy had a friend named Kamsa and an enemy named Bar Kamsa. Says the Maharal, friendships in this society were a double-edged sword. It wasn't just that we're friends. It's that we're not friends. It reminds me of high school. But the problem is, so many adults have never grown up out of high school. And it's all about the cool crowd and the in crowd and the cliques. This is exactly what the Maharal says on this Gemara. You could have a friend named Kamsa. I'm the friend. Bar Kamsa is the enemy. Friends are supposed to be to mechazik each other, so we can't be friends with everybody. But we don't have to be enemies with the people who are not in the clique. But because of that culture, says the Maharal, could a story like what happened eventually at the party happened? If you have a culture of Avas Yisrael, of good friends, even better friends, best friends, but no enemies, then you can't have a story like what happened at the party. Once you already have a culture of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, then you can have the story. So first approach may be, what does Sinah Sinah mean? It means Sinah. It means Sinah that we all know. It means Sinah that it's painful to think about. But we have to think about it because it exists in our world and we should do whatever we can to eradicate it. That's possibility number one. Possibility number two, if you take a look at the next source on your sheet, it's just a one-liner. It's a comment, part of a large, large essay. I just gave you the one line from the Ya'aros Dvash. The Ya'aros Dvash was our big, big drushes that were given by Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz. And Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz says, when we talk about Sinas Chinam in this Gemara, Lo ame haratzos zelazel. We don't mean like stomp people, you and me, fighting in the pizza shop. You cut the line, you didn't cut the line. No, we didn't mean like that. Rather, says the Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz, Rak ame haratzos letalmidei chachamim. Says the Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz, you want to know what caused the downfall of the Jewish commonwealth? What led to Golus? What led to the destruction of the Mikdash? It was the simple Jews hating the Talmid Chachamim. Then who knows what happened after that? It was a domino effect. But the Sinas Chinam was not Stam. It wasn't to anybody or to... It was specifically a resentment, an anger towards the Gedol Yisrael, towards Talmid Chachamim. And you see this, again, you see this. It doesn't mean, I'm sure Yonis and Eibshitz didn't feel... does not mean that Talmid Chacham are perfect. It doesn't mean that there are times where we can't scratch our head sometimes and not understand. It doesn't mean that we might not prefer this Talmid Chacham over that Talmid Chacham. But that's not the same thing as what he's talking about. A certain hatred. I have, Baruch Hashem, not seen so much of this in my life, but I've seen this. I've seen this. I'll tell you one particular story which can only be explained by something like this. Years ago when I was learning in Kollel, so we were living in a community where we were in an apartment, because I was in Kollel, and my wife was in Chinuch, so she was the rich one in the Mishpacha, and we went away to our parents for Sukkot, the first days, but I wanted to be in my neighborhood, in my community for Simchas Torah. We all know, again, speaking to women, Simchas Torah is never always the best topic to speak about. It's one of the many men holidays, more than most holidays, which are always men. But anyway, Simchas Torah, which at least for men is often a very fun Labor Day time, so I can tell you that it's no fun dancing when you don't know the people you're dancing with. Right? That's why when you go to weddings on the other side, you may not dance as much as when you know the people. So if you're going to be, you know, by your in-laws for Simchas Torah, even a Labor Day guy is not really going to be so in the mood to dance. So my wife always would do me a favor. We'd always come back and have Simchas Torah. But even though I am really a chassid, but I'm a recovering chassid. So therefore, the chutzlars, I used to eat in the sukkah Shmini Yatzeres. Because I got briskerized. My Rebbeim always told me, you have to eat in the sukkah. So even though my Zaydas would probably, who knows what they would do if they knew that I was eating in the sukkah Shmini Yatzeres. But I did. So I came back, and that first night of Yontif, Shmini Yatzeres, I needed a sukkah. But I lived in an apartment, and I wasn't even home for the first days. We didn't have a sukkah. So someone in the neighborhood who had a house, and it was very nice to invite us over for the meal. Wonderful. We had come back the night before Hoshana Rabbah. We were also in the town. And while we were there for Hoshana Rabbah, my Rebbe, who was a very, very well-known Rosh Hashiva and Posek in New York area, had it also, even though he had a big apartment, but he had a big mirpeset, like an Israel-type apartment, and he was able to actually have a sukkah. So we got invited. So the two nights that we needed a sukkah, we were there, the first night at the Rebbe's, and the second night at this person's house. So when we go to have Kiddush on Shmini Atzeres night, like we had barely started the meal, the person says to me, oh, I hear you were at the Rav's house the previous meal. What was it like? Tell me one thing. So we're already, it's late, you know, Shmini Atzeres is late. We want to get on with the meal. So we have a whole time to schmooze. We haven't even washed yet. So I'll tell you one thing. This big gadol is unbelievably makbid, like throughout the meal, numerous times, to praise his wife. I've never, ever in my life, I've been at many people, my own home, my father, unbelievable covet for my mother. But this is like a whole nother level in terms of articulating it. Every single dish, every single course. Oh, this is delicious. Finally, Ima, the grapefruit was delicious. You know, it was, my wife hasn't forgotten it either. This is a story that took place about 12 or 13 years ago. We both remember the story vividly. So I thought it's a nice thing to share. I'm going to tell them that the meatloaf tasted good. You know, it wasn't, which it did, of course, the rabbit's meatloaf was delicious. But I said, you know, I took something away from this. You know, he was giving me a nice chinuch lesson. So there was another person, not my host, Chas v'Shalom, but there was another person at the meal who hears me say this, says, really? Even so-and-so, even this Rav has respect for his wife? I went white. I went white. I didn't know what to say. Such sinna. That you're surprised that an Adam Gadol, a big Rosh Hashiva, respects his wife? It's sinna mikalkal. It didn't make any sense. Don't ask me to explain. I see people, some of the wheels are turning, trying to understand what the Muslim person... There's nothing logical about it. It was a sinna. So that was one example. I saw that a sinna of Tehillim Chacham and make you say... Intelligent people could say silly things. So Nebuch, it's a little bit of a machla that we have also. So as Rabbeinu said, Eibshitz, that was a sinna that destroyed the second base, which is a very different image than the typical understanding we have of sinas chinam, which was the first approach of the Medrash and of the Gemara. Let's now focus for the last part of the shir on a third approach. Very different. Very different, but it's one that I really want to focus on because at least for me, it's one that perhaps I need the most work on, but I take comfort in saying that I think we all need the most work on. And that is an approach that is pioneered and developed and repeated multiple times in many of his writings by the Netziv. In numerous places, I didn't even give you all of them, even though I gave you four citations from the Netziv, and there's one or two others I could have given, The Netziv in many, the great Netziv, Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin, the Netziv repeatedly speaks about this Gemara, about Sinas Chinam, but he has a very specific, original approach that no one else talks about. Let's take a look at the first one, which is maybe the most famous. Not the only, but the most famous time the Netziv discusses it. It's that middle source on the sheet where it says Ha Megdavar, which is the Netziv's commentary on the Torah. Psicha L'Sefer Bereishis. It's the introduction to his commentary on Sefer Bereishis. The Netziv starts off with the very famous pasuk, Hatzur Tamim Po'alo, Tzadik, Tzadik V'Yashar Hu. And he explains that when we talk about Tzadik V'Yashar, who's the who? Of course it's God, it's Rabbonu Shel Olam. So he says, Shevach Yashar, Hu Ne'emar LaHatzdik Din HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Churban Bayis Sheni. Amazing statement in its own right. That God needs to be defended. We have to defend the judgment of God. Prima facie, says in Netziv, you look at what happened second base of Mikdash, you looked around. It was from a Yidden everywhere. Davening, learning, chesed, all the good things. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the second base of Mikdash. Tzadik Varalo, how could you understand? Is this a righteous God? So says the Netziv, this pasuk is an allusion to explaining, if you will, to defending God's judgment. After all, even though they were tzadikim, chasidim, omlei Torah, nevertheless, he says in the second line, lo hayu yesharim b'halichos olamim. Now that even that sounds good, but it's still vague. What does that mean? They weren't yashar in the ways of the world, interacting with people. So he gets more specific, and here is the key part. What does that mean, sinas chinam, says the Netziv? Shebelibam, in their heart of hearts, ze et zer, zu et zu, chashtu et misharo shanog shalo kedotam, beyiras Hashem, shehu tzeduki v'apikaris. Anyone who did a little differently than them? What's he wearing that silly belt for? A gartel? Who are you kidding? Come on. What's he not wearing the gartel for? A little different. He's not talking about people who aren't Shomer Shabbat. We just said, they're tzadikim, chasidim, v'gomli chasadim. But somebody does something a little different than you? Misnagdish, chasidish, two different types of chasidim. And that is a tzaduki and an apikaris, a heretic. Ubo al yidei zeh, says the Netziv of Volozhin, bidei shvichas damim bederech haflago l'chol harosha b'olam ad shecharav habayis. We call this in English religious intolerance.
Not so
kosher,
it's not like it is today. They were tzedekim.
You
don't know who is
tzedekim. You'll see, 100%. And we have also the people who aren't so good.
There were people who maybe look just exactly like you, but we will go
with everything. Could be. Give me a fact pick on anything he said is fine with me, but I want to tell you what he says. Mm-hmm. And the Netziv has no rachmanis for them.
I don't have rachmanis either, but we can't compare it to what
I'm not.
Has, like,
I'm letting other people could draw their own lessons. I'm not. You could. Other people could draw their own lessons. Although I would say, Adarabba, according to what the Rebbetzin is saying, if, and I didn't say it, but if. Maybe one thinks that some of this behavior still exists now, then maybe we have less of a defense. According to what you were saying, then in those days, if they saw real tzadukim out there, they were like tzadukim hunters.
Oh, for sure, we don't have them.
And yet, the Netziv is still condemning them. But you'll see when I get to the last source, he applies it to his own generation. So he doesn't just leave it as ancient history. Yeah. But it's just even that, what did he say? Once you have the religious intolerance, that led to murder. This is a chiddush. Not everyone agrees to this, but this is an important not to overlook. The Netziv says that there was shvichas damim in the second Beis HaMikdash. The difference is, in the first Beis HaMikdash, they killed because they had bloodlust. They're robbing a bank, and the teller was there, so they shot him. They're breaking into the house, they got into a fight over who knows what, so they shot him. That was the kind of murder, you know, the Wild West. The murder in the second Beis HaMikdash, says the Netziv, was based on religious intolerance. They decided in their minds that the people who lived down the block who didn't daven at their shul, didn't do it like they did, were such rishayim that they were chayiv misa. He continues, again, I would never, who am I to say such a thing? This is the Netziv. Al kein hayatzira kadin shakarish baruch yasherhu ve'enu sobal tzadikim keimu. Again, of course, every time they killed, it was after going to the mikvah. And they killed with tzidkus. Says the Netziv HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not accept exactly what he says. You'll see in a second. Holchem, what does Hashem want? People who are holchem b'derech ha-yashar. Gam b'halichos ha-olam v'lo ba'akmimus. Right? They have this bent, twisted mentality. Al-kain, atzumi, af al-gav shu l'shem shamayim. Murder and hatred l'shem shamayim is also murder and hatred. D'zeh gorem churban ha-briya v'harisus yishuv ha-aretz. Take a look at the next two sources. Doesn't add much except for different flavor of language. Just you should see. He repeats it again. I told you, he repeats this theme. It clearly was nagging at the Netziv. He repeats this at least 5 or 6 times in his writings. He says here in the next source, he calls it Shvichas Damim Beheter. Right? Because they had already made, they were more heter to themselves. I would never murder anybody. But this is a mitzvah. They already said this is a mitzvah. Shesovrim, again, not my words, please. This is why I give you the source sheet, so you can't shoot me. Shesovrim hayu shehamitzvah laharog eschavero. Or in the next source, he says it again. Even though they're osek b'toyrud avodas Hashem, rov shvichas damim l'shem shamayim. They were killing l'shem shamayim. Because they judged anyone who was over al eza davar shehu tzeduki. It wasn't just that they did something wrong. Or different. But one thing wrong, you didn't do like me on this one thing? Russia! Chayiv Misa! Ubazeh na'asa hanhagusa mikulkeles ma'od. V'hakol l'shem shamayim. You can hear a certain bitterness as he ends that. One last phrase, and then I want to wrap it up with one other point. But everything I said until now is from his Perush al HaTorah. And not that he didn't believe it, just because it's a Perush on the Torah, but still you could say, well, it's just a hypothetical, and it's a Perush on the Torah, and it's talking about what happened 2,000 years before. But there's one more source that makes it all the more painful, and that is a tshuva. The Netziv wrote a response, he wrote a tshuva. What was the shaila? It wasn't about putting the fleshik spoon in the coffee or anything like that. It was much more profound. As you know, we are living in a world as broken as it is, but at least we kind of know the status quo. Like, we didn't wake up one day and say, oh my gosh, they're not all from. Like, that's the world that we've known our whole lives. But there were great gedolim, like the Netziv, who were alive at a time where the world was falling apart. It went from a period in which it was 90% plus Shomer Shabbos to 90% plus not Shomer Shabbos. And it happened very quickly. And there are many, many areas of halacha where you see poskim struggling. It's like they don't know what hit them. Not long ago, in a different community, I gave a halacha shiur about who counts for a minyan. Okay, so it's a man, but what else? Okay, over bar mitzvah. Okay, what else? So the big discussion, for example, what about a machal Shabbos? 9 men from a yidden and a machal Shabbos. Does he count for a minyan or not? For example, can a machal Shabbos get an aliyah? For an example. So you see, in the poskim, there's one halacha which you had for hundreds of years in theory, and then when you can isolate those poskim who are alive when the whole world was falling apart, and it's as if they don't have, like, they're standing, and the world is like, it's like sand just crumbling beneath their feet. And you see they're trying to struggle, whether it's the Binyan Sion in Germany or Chaim Voloshiner in Russia. How do we make sense of a new world? It's painful, but unbelievably fascinating as a study. So, Id Halacha is one of many examples, but here the Meshiv Dover is not discussing something as cute, if you will, as what to do about Aliyah. You see what I mean by a second. Rather, he's discussing something much more profound. And that is, there was a group of people who wanted to make separate communities. Have you heard such things?
No.
But this is where it started. You want to have a front row seat to history? This is the tshuva. It's a landmark tshuva. You could say that Jewish history since the Netziv has not exactly followed his ruling. But there was a group of people, this is the first time it was used, who created a community. Again, please don't misunderstand, I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just telling you the background of the tshuva. There were people who wanted to create a community called Machzike Hadas. Now, many of us are familiar with many communities or Batei Din called Machzike Hadas. It all comes from, this was the original. and they asked the Netziv, someone wrote a newspaper article, an editor, the proponent was, we should separate ourselves from the non-religious, and we'll call ourselves, we are the Machzikei Hadas. We're going to hold up. We're the faithful. So obviously there were Gedolim who supported that. Not the Netziv. The Netziv writes with passion, Eshulav, against this, such a terrible, terrible idea. So I'm giving you even a lot, which I won't even read inside. I mean, the tshuva is obviously much bigger even than this. But he talks about, you see in the first line, how people want to be lihipared mizela gamre, kemoshe nifrad avrami lot. You know, we want to separate ourselves. So he says, Eitzazu kasha kechorvos laguf ha'uma v'kiyuma. He says, you're going to kill the Jewish people. How can we do such a thing? So he goes on and on, and then, again, the background I gave you, it's painful enough. For those who want, you could look further. But then, he gives his own pshat, which we're already now all familiar with. He gives the whole pshat about what happened. You're reminding him of the second Beis HaMikdash. And again, here, again, your hara was good. But here you see the Netziv applying it, even to people who probably weren't Shomer Shabbos in his day. And he says, now you look at anyone who's different than you, even if they didn't have Eira, he says, Elisha Asa Avera, Mikomokom Machmas Sinas Chinom, Shofto Letzaduki Shemarinoso, Vemizen is Rabbi Shvichas Domim. He says, what happened in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash was that such religious intolerance, they mattered for themselves, you could kill people. And then he adds, and this is the part that I thought was so painful but important to read in the underlying section. He applies it now to his own generation. He says, what happened in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash? It is not far-fetched to imagine it would happen again in my day, says the Netziv. Asher al piros einai, I see that this machzike hadas, Yidmesh el ploni eno miznai gal pidar gobodes Hashem, they're going to see that someone else doesn't act like them. Yishpetenu laminus, Yisrachek vimenu v'yerodfim zachar zeh beheter, bedimyon kozev chas v'sholom, v'shiches kol ha'am Hashem, chalila. Zeh afilu, how do you like this afilu? This could happen afilu im hayinu ba'artzenu, v'rush v'zazenu. Yes.
That in the town of Kamsan Bakamsa, you even had to, what was the mistake, he brings with him like a big touch of irony, you had to wait until you received a second invitation to say you were actually nice, okay. So you knew that it wasn't a mistake with your name. And then there's this big question, okay. And the point that I'm actually making, like, so this is a huge, it's a ridiculous business. You have to actually wait, like if Shosh sends me an invitation, I have to wait to see that it comes to Friedland and not Friedman, in case, like, she really meant Friedman and I would arrive, and what are you doing, how you schkotz, like I don't
okay.
know if you want you or something. But my actual point is, and like, I remember, like, Rav Goldfarb once, he made a whole, and he would bring it up many times, like, the harshness, the extreme ferocity almost, like when the Vilna Gaon wrote, which was like his trademark of the things that he really needed to emphasize that were absolutely like the sine qua non, so to speak, of our morality. Like when he wrote to his wife from Eretz Yisrael, he said, and Esti and I feel very strongly about this, it's like so basic, why is it ignored? When he wrote from Eretz Yisrael, he said, and watch the children, like watch how they behave, like be absolutely hard-nosed. I mean, obviously these weren't his words.
So how does that relate to what we're talking about?
No, you'll see.
Okay.
He said, like if you see in the girls that there's nastiness or something, like girls, don't send them to shul. Like what are they picking up? What are they going to shul for? Like that they should be big. Like they. What I'm saying is like stuff that we tolerate in our day schools, like nasty. Like the fact that there's bullying in our schools, that there are cliques in our schools, it is, we're talking about that, like, even among the Gedolim, like the Tzedakah and everything, that they were prepared to exclude and say, you're a traitor Jew. The fact that, like, I taught it as a mother and everything, and I could never actually believe, until one day, I could never believe that people are so casual about bullying. One day a school principal called me over, like we were talking about something that was happening in the classroom, and he said to me, and I tried to interrupt, he said, "You don't understand." He said, "Stuff that you and I see, like, we think that parents go home and they say to their children, 'You can't do this, you can't be me, you can't crush other children.'" He said, "A lot of parents go home and they say to the children, like, 'That's good, that's fantastic. Don't be the sucker. You be the one who's on top. Don't beat somebody else.'" And then I actually kind of integrated. This is a reality that we imagine that Jewish parents go home and say, like, what? But what I'm saying is that there's a terrible reality. It's as, like, which we are completely complacent about.
It happened to us one in the name of one.
But it's a terrible, and I mean, even like what Rav Bagnum was emphasizing also, like in this, like that they came when he said, like with Rav Zacharia, like you caused it, like in the end, when he says, like the fact that you made off is a blemish, there's something that's not the chumrah. This we can't allow to be said in Israel, that a pagam, like an animal with a pagam, was sent and it was tolerated. This you had to bring to everybody's attention. But when you sat at the Suda and you let somebody, and you let, no, send him out, he's the wrong one, how can he be, you let the, when all the chachamim, I'm sorry to, like, I'm finished now, but like about such a thing that the chachamim were just complacent, like where a Suda came and somebody was kicked out because he was the wrong person, but we do it all the time. I mean, as parents,
okay,
like a huge,
listen, again, it's painful, but again, the Netziv is writing a long time ago. He's writing about an even longer time ago, but again, as I said, he talks about his own generation, and I assume what spurred you on is that you look around, and unfortunately, as I say, sometimes these things look unfortunately all too familiar.
It looked right.
Yeah. So I want to add two more things, because I don't want to hold you up. We started late. I've only spoke for 50 minutes, just as you know. But, no, not you, not you. I'm saying in general. Anyone who has to leave should leave. I would. But I don't want, if anyone has to leave, they should leave. But I do want to finish in the next 10 minutes so that I don't go above my hour. I want to add two more points because I think it's very relevant. One is an insight of the Vilna Gaon into why I think this is happening. And number two is a charge, I hope, for the future. The Vilna Gaon, in the last source on the sheet, adds one thing, which is very mysterious, but I'll tell you what I think he means. The Vilna Gaon says, if you remember when we read the Gemara, we said that there was a stage, the second stage of the Gemara, in which it says that the generation of the first Beis HaMikdash, Niskala Avonam, they knew what the Avera was, and they also knew when it would end. The second Beis HaMikdash, they didn't know exactly what the cause was of the Avera was, and they also didn't know when it's going to end. So the way I quoted the Gemara at the time, which was really based on Rashi, was just, yes, point A and point B. It wasn't necessarily causal. But many Mefarshim, and particularly this comment of the Vilna Gaon, say, no, it was a connection. Because Niskala Avonam, Niskala Kitza. Because now, what does that mean? So, there's a lot of ways you could take that, but look what the Vilna Gaon himself says. He adds a whole twist. What does that mean, Nisgala? So the simple understanding is it was revealed by the Navi, by the Rabbi, by the Rebbetzin, someone was shrying, this is what the Avera was.
Also the obvious nature of the Avera.
Good, all true. The Vilna Gaon has a different understanding. Hatam ki harishonim, it's the last source on the page where it's underlined, hayu ma'asehem atovim, Tmunim va'avonoseihem gluyim kilibam hayatov va'achronim lehetach. What does he mean? Nisgala avonam. He means it was superficial. In their heart, what was tamun, what was hidden, what was really in their kishkas, was the pintaliyid was to be a good person. Elamai nebuch. They went after lust. They went after temptation. They went after their tempers, and they killed, and they this, and they that. But the emes, you can rip away the shmutz. They were good people. Who said? Chazal, the Baskel, the Vilna Gaon. They're not defending themselves. We're looking retrospectively. We're saying, so you know why they were able to have a ketz? Because really, 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 they just had to wipe off the shmutz. But inside there was something very special. However, he says, when it came to the door of the second Beis HaMikdash, what did the Gemara say? Torah, Tefillah, Gemilas Chasadim, Tzadikim, Chasidim, all the compliments. Says the Vilna Gaon, that was all benigle. That was all superficial. Now, I don't necessarily think that he means it was fake. A show off. Although it might have been that too. But it doesn't have, you don't even have to go that far. It just means it wasn't really a part of them. It was part of their habit. It was part of their community. They went through the motions. They did all these good things. But that wasn't really them. You know what was really them? If you ripped them open, you know what they bled? Sinas chinam. They didn't bleed tefillin and Talmud Torah and mitzvahs and chesed. They did all that. But that was nisgala. But what was tamun, what was really inside of them, was something much worse. So I want to add one final point, and then we'll go to the conclusion. Here's my ha'ara, my chiddush. I think, this is my take, you'll take it or leave it, is that the gra leads to the netziv. That doesn't work out historically, but I'll explain what I mean. This type of superficial frumkeit is that what I think more often than not leads to the intolerance that the netziv speaks about. I mentioned before that I've unfortunately, again, I don't think I'm the only one, but in my personal life, in my yeshiva life, in my rabbinic life, I've known lots of people who unfortunately fit the netziv's criteria. In virtually every example that I can think of, they also fit the gra's. What do I mean to say? The people whose frumkeit is more superficial are much more likely to be intolerant. Even in this world, I've known people who are super duper 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 frum to everything, and yet they have no problem being tolerant of other people. It's not because they're less frum than the kanoim, but somehow they're more secure with who they are. The ones who, for whom it's more superficial, it invariably leads to insecurity.
Insecurity leads to Christianity.
Okay, they got to get on a couch and we'll figure that out. I'm not a psychologist, I don't know exactly. But I think...
generally, some insecure, then they'll put on airs even more.
Yes, exactly. So the soup, exactly. That's, it's unfortunately a bitter, bitter, vicious, vicious cycle. What the gra is diagnosing and what the netziv is diagnosing, I think, again, they don't put it together themselves, obviously, but I think if you think about it, it goes hand in hand. This is, obviously, she goes on saying, this is not a sheer advocating that we should be less committed, but the point is, if our commitments are really not about for show, and not for, but it's for us, it's because what we know is right, it's really who we are, we're worried about ourselves, not other people. So then, it may, when we see people who are different than us, it may bother us, it may be oblivious to us, but we're not going to do things which are for sugar. We're not going to be so filled with hatred and so intolerant. We could say, Rachmanis, Nebuch, they don't know better. A bigger Rachmanis, they do know better. There are all sorts of people who do all sorts.
So you're saying those ladies who walk around dressed like they are back ladies?
I didn't say anything about ladies.
I'm just saying.
You're putting words in my mouth.
As an example, they are superficially from.
I'm not diagnosing anyone who I don't know. You're talking about
an example. Those what? Ladies who dress themselves.
I think those people have far worse problems than being superficial.
Yeah.
I'm being serious. I'm being completely serious.
I
actually saw one right at the traffic circle right here, and my car swerved. I was so shocked. You read about the Burka ladies. I never saw one. I did last week. But okay. Not on the men's side.
Very much not.
Anyway, the point is that, again, I'm not discussing that, but I want to be, in all seriousness, I want to be maybe, again, in case I wasn't clear, I'm not discussing now, for lack of a better word, chumra X or Y. That's a different question. I'm talking about whatever your chumras are, whatever your hashkafas are, whatever your mesorah is, because you should keep your mesorah, you should keep your minhagim, and we should all try to be machmir and many wonderful things. But whatever it is, I'm talking about how you relate to other people. And as far as I'm concerned, you could be, whatever you call these ladies, But the point is not how you act yourself. That's one separate question. I'm not saying it doesn't matter at all. I'm saying that's not the topic of the shiur. My focus on the shiur is not what you do for yourself, but how you look at other people. And I think the people who are the most intolerant are also the ones who are the most insecure. I don't want to. This is not a sheer a topic I came prepared to talk about. Okay.
No, but you should just know that last year I did, when this time of year I actually decided to walk down the street and not try to look further than these things, and that was one.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, I want to end. We have 5 more minutes. I want to end with a little bit of summary, because again, I feel, again, in both in various comments, and this is good. this part is by design. I could see that obviously there's a desire to take this and apply it, to make it lamaisa, which is good. That's the point. So, however, we'll make this lamaisa. It's important that we should take this lamaisa. So, I'll give you my hope, my tefillah, and I want to end with something painful, but I hope it gets us to someplace positive. I remember a number of years ago when I was still a rabbi in Baltimore, when one of the great, great tragedies of the recent years was the terrible pigua in Merkaz Harav. The whole world was shaken, Rosh Chodesh Adar. The terrorist attack in the yeshiva Merkaz Harav were on Rosh Chodesh Adar at night. 8 yeshiva boys sitting literally over Svarim, some of them in the library, some of them in the Mesmer, and gunned down, literally blood pouring over open Gemaras. A murder behechel. It was like the whole neshama of Klal Yisrael was ripped out on many, many levels. So came the Shloshim, a month later. I'm very, very proud to say a beautiful thing happened. The entire community of Baltimore came together for a Shloshim in the Aguda. And there were 2 speakers, me and Rabbi Yisachar Friend. And all of the Rabbanim came from all of the different Shvatim of Klal Yisrael in Rav Moshe Heineman's Aguda in Baltimore. I don't know how many cities in the whole world this could have happened in. For a special Shloshim, Zecha Nishmas, the Kedoshim of Merkaz Harav. So at the end, we gave Halacha Shur about Kiddush Hashem and the like. There was a Kelmole in the middle. It was very, very moving. At the end of my talk, which was a Halacha Shur, I ended with the following statement, which I'm reminded of given the topic. I said, unfortunately, I'm so heartened, not only in Baltimore, but throughout the world, of the tremendous achdus and identity with the Ima Anochi B'Tzara. Everyone came together, this horrible Tzara. I said, the only problem is, it takes a Tzara like this for us to come together. I said, unfortunately, we're still not at the point, but what it takes is Jewish blood flowing in the streets to wash away the stain of Sinas Chinam. That's what I said then, those years ago.
It's the same as the Friday of the Nachshon.
Yeah. So when we know how to come together for tzaris, that's better than nothing. But that's not obviously what it should. And I'll end with, no, exactly. So I'll end with a tefillah that I mentioned there, which I had heard from a friend of mine who went. I didn't go to pay a shiva call, but I don't have a solution. I have a tefillah, but I have advice. So I have a friend who went to be Menachem Avila, to be there to visit families, and at the end of the Shiva, they had an event, I think, in the Yeshiva, in the Merkaz Harav. And my friend told me that he heard one of the Rosh Yeshivas there said in the name of Rav Avram Shapira Zatzal, who had been the Rav Rashi and was also the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva. And he explained the following Gemara, with this Mamish will conclude. The Gemara quotes in Brachos, the Pasuk, which we know, of course, from Kriya Shema, right, where we say, So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Vavcha, navshcha, miodecha. What does that mean? That the love Hashem with. With what? The Gemara says, b'cholavavcha. That, says the Gemara, that means, b'shnei yitzrecha. Yitzah tovin, yitzah hara. What exactly that means? Not for tonight. That's what the Gemara says. You have all different parts of your personality, let's say, b'shnei yitzrecha, every part of your personality has to love Hashem. B'chol nafshecha, says the Gemara, afilu no tell us nafshecha, even if they kill you. You have to be faithful, you have to show love of Hashem. B'chol ma'odecha, either it means with all your money, or it means b'chol midah v'midah, meaning in the good times and in the bad times, always have to love Hashem. So Rabbi Avram Shapiro asked a simple question. He said, 2 of the 3 deal with life. B'shnei yitzrecha, b'chol ma'odecha, that's how you live. pump right in the middle, the Gemara put in, even if they'll kill you. Doesn't, you know, one of these is not like the other. Why? It doesn't fit. So he said, pshat is no. What the Gemara really means to say is, if you realize, if you think about it, that I love Hashem so much, afilo no telas nafshecha, I would even be willing to give up my life for Him. Live life knowing that you'd be willing to die for Him. A life lived knowing what you'd be willing to give up the life for is a different life lived than without that commitment. Of course, it's true halachically, we have to give up our life sometimes. But he says this pasuk, this Gemara, was talking about loving Hashem, didn't mean just loving Hashem when you die. It meant if you know that you're willing to die for Hashem, then your life is a different life. It's also about life. So I would add, when it comes to our topic, similarly, we know what it's like to come together when there are no teles nafshein. We know what it's like to come together when it's that level of mesiras nefesh. What we have to work on is trying to be in touch with that. If we would think about that, remind ourselves each time we hear about a terrible tragedy, Nebuch, in Bulgaria, and in the Merkaz Arav, and in the Mir, and in this place, and it doesn't matter where. With Leiby Kletsky, this, it doesn't matter where. How every Jew, we all, anyone with a Yiddish heart, felt, oh, our own heart was ripped. So if we would just remember that, not only those days, but we'd remember that every day. Why do we feel so terrible when someone who we never met before has a tragedy? Because it's family, it's a Jew. So if we can get choked up and so upset when we hear about a tragedy happening to another Jew, if we would just keep that in our mind, even on a plain, normal day, we could never come to the Netziv, we could never come to the Gra, we could never come to any of these things. We compartmentalize. But just like Shapiro was saying, that a life lived knowing what you'd be willing to give up your life for, I think Huadin is the same thing. If we remember what we're willing to love a Jew for, only when there's spilled blood, hopefully that will remind us about the basic reality, which should keep us together. I have to say, listen, we're 15, 20 people here. We can't solve the world's problems. If you ask me, if I look for an Eitzah, I have no Eitzah to solve the world's problems. But lo alecha al machal ligmor, but you're also not ben charon lihibatel mimena. We could make a commitment this year, this 9 days, this Tisha B'Av. Well, at least start with us. Could you imagine how much better a world it would be if there was at least 20 people who were makbid on Avas Yisrael? And then we could have our evolution. We should each impact our own family and our own relatives. And who knows, by next year, maybe Tishwa will even be a Yontif. Halavai. Thank you very much for coming.